episode 351.
In fact, I think a lot of the classes would be great if we would have some more fundamental type stuff. You know, I think the hard part, because I've been asked to do some classes too, and I've never wanted to do it because I always felt like what I teach is not advanced enough for these guys. And I think that's a misconception on my own. And that's a misconception in our field that we need this kind of cutting edge, you know, advanced technology training, where a lot of the stuff that people are confused on is on the fundamentals.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome to Remarkable Results Radio. Carm Capriotto here. Welcome to episode 351 with Paul Danner, who is an instructor at Rosedale Technical College, owns a mobile diagnostic business, and is the YouTuber better known as Scanner Danner. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their Garage Rewards loyalty program for Texan Chops at fmmotorparts.com. Hey, the network of social followers, likers, and connections builds with the Aftermarket's award-winning podcast. I'm honored to make new Facebook friends like Megan Meeks, Aaron Smith, Bill Bowling, Diane Levine, and Todd Richardson, and my new Instagram followers, Stephen Gelman and Bob Greenwood, and my latest LinkedIn connections, Nick Chapman, Paul Weston, Steve Dawson. Get connected at remarkableresults.biz/social. So glad you've subscribed to your favorite podcast listening app to catch aftermarket conversations worth hearing. We are on over a dozen podcast listening apps, including our own. Find the options at remarkableresults.biz/app. Our industry uses the podcast for inspiration, ideas, breakthroughs, and innovation. Please be sure you check out our series of shows like The Business Coaches Lab, Technician Talk, and the Technology Series, among others. Never stop learning and keep delving into our content, and you might discover your next great idea. Hey, there's a lot of diagnosticians out there, and there's no one like Paul Danner, who has parlayed his thirst for getting it right into an incredible career. Paul Danner, more well known as Scanner Danner, and I had one heck of a talk. He's on his porch, and me and the Remarkable Results Radio studio both enjoying a refreshment. This is an up-close and personal conversation that shares how the brand Scanner Danner got started, his family, his trip through adolescence, and how he parlayed his 25 years of diagnostic passion into teaching diagnostics, and also his YouTube career. Paul says that God graced him with the ability to troubleshoot. He says he is wired for variables and loves what-ifs. He's always been about Diag. It's in his blood. And he's written a textbook about it for his students that can actually be purchased on his website. He hopes that one day his students will use his field manual when they finish school. Paul's greatest gift is teaching his skills to his students. He says, when you teach, you learn. His steepest learning curve came when he started teaching. He's always looking for answers. Find the key talking points, Paul's bio, and links to his website and YouTube channel at remarkableresults.biz/E351. Paul says your learning curve comes from the drawer full of good parts, and you know this to be true. Enjoy an up-close and personal interview with Paul Scanner Danner. Hey, a warm welcome to Paul Danner, instructor, Rosedale Technical College, and better known in the industry as Scanner Danner.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not Dan. I wrote that in my bio.
That's something about your bio. My name isn't Dan, and I didn't need a scanner to match the Danner. Anyway, hey, great to have you here. We need to share with the audience how we have basically set this interview up. So I hook in the virtual studio with Paul, and when we had our pre-call, he's sitting on the porch and he's having a beer, and we just went on for an hour, and it was just a great dialogue. I learned a lot about you, and that hopefully comes out in the interview here. And so I realize that you're sitting on your front porch.
I am sitting on my front porch. It's nice out, and you know, I was fighting. I actually did a Facebook Live thing today with fighting bolts out of an exhaust manifold on my RV. So I'm like, I was sweating. Like,
all right, okay, I get it. And so I said, so it's happy hour someplace, somewhere. And so he gets a there it is. He just opened his Mick Ultra. And I and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to the fridge too. Yeah. And I picked up and I brought this bottle of Labatt's Blue Light in front of Paul. And he goes, oh, my God, that's my beer too.
Yep, that is my beer of choice.
So where'd you learn to drink Labatt's Blue Light?
I was telling Carm right before he turned the mics on that it is. I play ice hockey in an over 40 ice hockey league, so I call it my old man hockey league, and it is beer league hockey, and we have literally a bucket of beer delivered to our locker room at the end of every game, so it's part of our league fees that we get Labatt Blue Light, and of course for me. It's the beer of the Penguins, the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's the beer that's promoted for Penguin games is Blue Light. So I suppose that's why the league decided it was going to be blue, Labatt Blue. And so Labatt Blue Light is now my beer of choice.
Let me continue to tell you the beer story. Labatt Blue, of course, Labatt's is a Canadian beer. I forget who it's owned by, a big corporation now, but Buffalo, New York is the headquarter for Labatt's in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
We used to be a Budweiser town, and now the number one beer is Labatt's.
And that's where you're from, right?
I'm from Buffalo, yeah.
Buffalo, that's right.
We're 4 hours away, man.
Yeah, we are not far. We were surprised to learn that when we spoke last time.
So it all started for you like so many techs, high school, couple years, automotive tech, and then you decided to go to Rosedale Technical College?
Yes.
Interesting, yep. Rings a bell. You're still teaching there. You're teaching there. Wow.
It's my alma mater. Yeah, I'm back teaching at the school that I went to that started the foundation for my career path. It was absolutely Rosedale Technical College. And, you know, a lot of the guys that know me and follow me will know this name. There was one instructor. His name was Dan Svitko, who was a mentor to me at the school. He was an instructor, and he's the one that put me on this path. You have that one person somewhere in your life that just has that kind of an impact on you. It was definitely Dan Svitko at Rosedale.
Are you having an impact on students?
I would like to think so, Carm. I mean, it's not one for me to talk about it. Like, oh, yeah, look at me.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
You know? Don't be so humble. 18 years doing this, there's got to be some guys, Paul, that have, you know, picked up the phone, stopped by and said, hey, I got to tell you, Paul, thank you so much for all that you did.
Of course. And in fact, I get that. And I even get to watch them now because of YouTube and because of video. And I get to see people and hear from them all the time. And one particular one, and I'm going to mention his name. So Tommy Wolf was a personal friend of mine. And he actually has a YouTube channel now. It's Positive Lead Diagnostics, which is kind of a cool name if you think about it.
Yeah.
It's been 9 years now, and he is one that I get to watch his career path because we kind of bonded when he was at school with me and through some personal stuff. And I don't think I want to go too much into that, but there was a death in his family, and we just kind of bonded. Mm-hmm. And I took him kind of under my wing, and then I've stayed close with him because of that. We're really, really good friends. We still hang out all the time. So he's been in the field now 9 years, and he's just doing phenomenal. I mean, he's on track. Tommy, I hope you're okay with me saying this, but he's on track to make $90,000 this year, his ninth year out in the field. So that's pretty damn good, I think.
Good for him. So, you know, when you got out of Rosedale, you actually went out and worked as a tech.
I did for 8 years. And so people ask me that question all the time is, hey, have you always done just diagnostic work? And how do I create that kind of field for myself? Because a lot of guys like that idea that they don't want to get their hands dirty and they want to do electrical and diagnostic work. And I always say, listen, I was a tech full time for 8 years. I had to do everything. I wasn't just a drivability diagnostic guy. I had to do everything. Of course, I always focused on diagnostic work. Always. It was always my passion to do electrical and performance and computer controlled stuff. And so I always had those kind of jobs. I was kind of the guy at the garages I worked for to do that, but I had to do other repairs too.
Where did the passion for recording case studies come from and your desire to write a book?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are surprised by the method I went through. It wasn't, it wasn't a big kind of grand scheme I had. I wasn't trying to, and I said this in my bio that I just sent you. I actually just wrote that today. Carm, I don't do anything right unless it's last minute, just so we're clear on that.
Good.
I literally just wrote that bio for you.
And you sent me your picture today too, last minute. I love that. I mean, you know, you're kind of like me.
Yeah.
You really do good when the pressure's on.
Right. I need pressure for sure to make it happen. Yeah. I fell into it, Carm. I really just, when I started teaching, I took about a $10,000 pay cut from industry, from where I was. I really just started working for different garages, and it just so happened on my route home from school that there was a garage that had opened, and it happened to be my service manager, my former service manager for Pep Boys. I used to work for Pep Boys for 5 of those 8 years I was with Pep Boys, and he was my service manager. He knew what I could do. You know, I was his right-hand man for diagnostic work, and he's like, "Hey Paul, can you look at this car for me? You know, it's got a check engine light on, and you know, this has never been my strong point." And I'm like, "Heck yeah, I can." It was like, you know, I called it diaper money. I had, you know, 2 little kids at the time, and I needed some bills, and you know, for some diaper money, I'll do some diagnostic work for you. And that's where it began. I just kind of started doing mobile diagnostic work for different garages, and word of mouth spread. And over the years it expanded, and I started, you know, thinking about how I can make my class better, and I could take pictures and write case studies, you know, in digital and text format. And that's where the book began, was from that.
No. So it was like, I can take this and bring it into the classroom.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Because it's nice to be able to teach and understand concepts that are in a textbook that are written for you. And that's great. I use James Halderman. I'll give him a plug. I love Halderman. His books are phenomenal. Great foundational stuff. I use his material all the time in my classes. But it's not my own. And I needed to, when I'm teaching, it needs to be something I've touched. It needs to be something I've felt, you know, learned the concepts, you know, my own understanding of it. And that was where I always felt like writing specific, like, case studies and procedures, it really helped me teach my class better.
Got it.
So here on one hand, doing the mobile stuff helped me be able to present material to my class better. And then when I would teach on that subject, then I'd learn it even better, and it made me a better mobile diagnostic technician.
Yeah, isn't that, that is the truth. And people have to understand what Paul just said is, when you teach, you learn better.
Oh my goodness. I would say that was probably my steepest learning curve, Carm, is when I started teaching. Because you get these questions that these students ask you, and you're like, "Huh, I never thought of that. That's a really good question, and I need to find an answer for that." And then over the years of teaching, you end up having those answers. In fact, you have that question in your head before it's even asked. You know,
I know. If you want to be an expert, write a class, teach it 10 times, and man, yes, you know your stuff.
That's right. That's right. Exactly correct. And so that's kind of the beginning of the writing of the textbook. And, you know, to be honest with you, it was never a book intended to be a book originally. It was me writing like PowerPoints and just supplementing class. Like it wasn't till maybe 10 years in that I put everything together and started selling it. I used to just go to the print or the copy machine at school and print out the PowerPoints for the class and hand out the material. And that was the way it went.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. So was it the video camera that broke this whole thing open?
Yes, it was the video camera, Carmen. Again, I said this in the bio that I wrote for you today, like I never set out to be a YouTuber. Ever. My intent was just, okay, I can take this material, show it to you on paper, show it to you in digital photos, talk about it in class, have some nice lectures and discussions of what I did and why. I'm like, man, would it be cool to take the camera with me and show these procedures that I'm teaching you in a live case study? And that's what I started doing. And my intent was just to make my class better. I started giving my students, I started putting on YouTube because I was like, hey guys, here's where you can go watch this case study. It has to do with, you know, chapter 2, page 8, you know, in my book. Here's what I'm doing. Here's why. Here's a case study for it. And that's where it all began, Carm.
Or it was like you were called out on a diag and you get there and you say, oh my God, this is so great for my students.
Yes.
I want to take this.
Yes.
How can I duplicate what had just happened tonight on the way home into the classroom?
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And then people started asking, hey, what's this book you're talking about? I'm like, oh, let's see. How do I get this book in your hands? So, you know, then I made it an ebook and, you know, try to make it global where anybody could have it. And, you know, that's where it kind of morphed into what it is today, and inviting people in my classroom, doing classroom recordings, the lectures, the whole deal, and all of that is where...
Bigger than you ever thought it would be, right?
Of course. Yep. Yep.
What are you thankful for?
Well, from a professional level, I'm thankful for the ability that God has given me to be able to troubleshoot. I really feel like... there's a certain mindset that is needed. And it's not that I'm a really smart guy. I'm not. I mean, I barely passed high school. I was stoned all the time in school. I didn't care about school. It just wasn't my thing. And I was just wired for variables. Like I like detective work. I like to think about the what ifs. And I always say this. Have you ever seen, this is kind of a drug reference, but so maybe it won't make the cut, but you've seen Revenge of the Nerds and Ogre. They're on the island. They're all smoking weed. And Ogre's like, what if C-A-T really spells dog? You know, that kind of thought. I'm not giving props to pot, but it was just that kind of thought process. You know, that's what you need to do troubleshooting in this field. And I'm just grateful that God gave me the mind to be able to do it.
I watched your videos.
Yeah.
You
fun.
You're just personable and you enjoy what you do. And it just comes out that you're solving problems, but you're having fun doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell my students that all the time. What's it take? Because I get that question a lot, is what's it take to be good at this? And it really, you're not going to be good at anything that you don't like. So you have to like it first. If you like it, you can be good at it. It just takes practice. You know, I didn't start playing hockey, Carm, until I was 23. They used to call me the fall guy. I went down the road and there were some kids playing roller hockey on like a, you know, parking lot. I'm like, hey man, can I join you? You know, like who's this old guy with these teenagers? They used to call me the fall guy, but here's, cause I fell all the time. I'd skate and fall, skate, fall, skate, fall. I wore skates out, my knee pads out just because I fell so much, but I loved it. Loved it. And I kept going, kept going, kept going. You know, and that's now 20 some years later, I'm still playing hockey. It's the same analogy. You got to like it to be good at it.
That's a great story of failure. Get up and do it again. Learn from it and learn from it.
Yeah. Get up and do it again. I tell my students all the time to get good at diagnostic work. You will have a drawer full of good parts. The biggest drawer in your toolbox will have good parts in it. My students say, well, where's the good parts come from? Well, the good parts come from that sensor you called that you thought was bad. You replaced it. You can't give it, you know, put the other one back in. So where's it was a missed call is the point. Where does that old part go that you sold that customer? Well, it goes in your toolbox. So the next time you have one of those, you at least have a part. When you get to that point, you at least have a part you can maybe substitute to check your diagnosis. You know, I don't advocate parts changing. It's right. Don't be a parts changer.
That's right. I mean, that's the theme of your YouTube channel, the theme of your website. That's exciting to hear. That's your passion for, you know, don't change the part, figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's where the drawer full of good parts came from, though, was a whole bunch of missed calls, Carm. A whole bunch of falls on the ground. You're bleeding. You're hurt. But you know, you get back up and do it again. And the key is knowing what you did wrong. Why did I fall right there? What happened? Be willing to take 5 extra minutes at your shop. Doesn't matter where you work. Doesn't matter if you work flat rate. Take 5 minutes and figure out where you went wrong. Get a known good capture of what it is you were trying to fix, and then you won't make that mistake again.
Thank you, man. Teaching today, take us into the classroom, the fundamentals that we work on. Are we teaching enough of them? Are we teaching too advanced? As a person who has gotten so ingrained in diagnostics, you're good at it, you're natural at it, you have fun at it, you love it. How do we graduate more people? What do we have to change anything at that post-secondary level?
Oh, man, there's so much to that, Carm. That's a conversation we have at the school all the time. And I don't think there's really one answer for that. It really starts at the high school level and our, just the way our industry has always been viewed is that, you know, we're grease monkeys and, you know, we're kind of the toss offs of the normal curriculum that, you know, we just get the kids who can't learn and can't, you know, oh, just go be a mechanic. Like that whole mindset is just wrong. And you know that. I mean, look at today's cars and the technology that's behind them. We really need the schools to push a trade and a technical college and not necessarily a 4-year college, you know, degree program. So, I mean, that's one. That would be one.
But do we need to go to school longer? Is 2 years enough?
That's a good question too, Carm. I get that from my students who have me for 2 months. So I have a 2-month class and, you know, I tell them that, you know, there are some benefits of making a class longer, but there's also a point where you need to get out in the field and start doing it. You need to fall. Like you need to fall down and scrape your knee, right? For the hockey analogy. Yep. That you can't learn it until you start doing it on your own, where you have that car in front of you, your service manager hands you that car, and you can't walk back to him 5 minutes later and say, well, I have a map sensor code. It needs a map sensor. That's not going to fly. You're on your own now. You need to do it yourself. That's where the real learning comes in after you've had that foundation. So I don't know that a longer technical college program would be more beneficial. I don't know that that's the answer.
You're saying theory is good. Yeah, theory is good. Foundation's good, but you got to get out. You got to get toss them out in the deep end of the pool.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yep. Yep.
I'm listening. I'm a tech. I've been out there for 8 or 9 years. I really feel good. I'm listening to what you're saying. I love diagnostics. Give some advice to my listeners to what they need to do to get better at it.
Well, first thing I always tell my guys, and whether it's 8 or 9 years or just starting out, is you need to be in a shop that's going to give you diagnostic work. It can't be, you know, you're the oil change guy for a year and then you're the brake guy for another year. And that, no, it can't be that way. It has to be a steady diet of diagnostic work. And if we can call them case studies, that's great. They're your own case studies. You need to be touching the stuff all the time. And so that's what it takes to get good at it. So that would be one.
But there's not a lot of shops that sometimes can get enough of that into a Diag's workflow.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have an answer for you there, Carm. I say leave your shop and go find one that does.
All right, Paul. So I'm going to Vision, and I want to take some courses. Recommend what I should be concerned with.
The first thing would be you need to go, right? You need to go to these training events like Vision, and went to one. There was a CAN conference in Chicago and went to a few years ago, and Auto Mechanica is another one. Having instructors like John Thornton and Scott Manna, and you know all the big names that are doing that. In fact, Brandon is one you had.
Brandon Struckler.
Yes, is one you had recently, and I love. I actually call Brandon sometimes when I need a voice just to, hey man, let me throw this by you. What do you think? And in fact, I did a case study on an RX300 that had a sheared keyway, and Brandon and I were talking on the phone just to be able to identify mm-hmm. that without pulling the timing components off was really, really cool. And you need to learn from these guys is my point. And you know, I am not. So what some people think maybe, Carm, I am not a replacement for these things. This whole scanner danner thing is not. I teach newbies. Let me give you the foundational stuff. You go in the field, do your thing, and then go to these classes.
You just said the word. You just said fundamental. And I guess if I was looking over the training listed Vision and I saw basic electric or something like that, would you say, yeah, you can't get enough of that?
No, absolutely. In fact, I think a lot of the classes would be great if we would have some more fundamental type stuff. You know, I think the hard part, because I've been asked to do some classes too, and I've never wanted to do it because I always felt like what I teach is not advanced enough for these guys. And I think that's a misconception on my own. And that's a misconception in our field that we need this kind of cutting edge, you know, advanced technology training, where a lot of the stuff that people were confused on is on the fundamentals.
Yeah. I was talking to a bunch of guys and they said, you know, after 3 years, take that humbling experience and go into a fundamental class and you'll be, you know, if you learn one or two things, you'll rehash it, you'll go over it, and it will really help your foundation.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm in complete agreement with you there, Carm. Fundamentals is key. You need to know your circuits. You need to know voltage drops. You need to know how your sensor circuits work. You need, you know, info on pull-up, pull-down circuitry, what I call, you know, for your signal circuit designs to power and ground side switching on outputs and bias voltage and how it all applies. It's so universal, but so key in every diagnosis that you do. Maybe not everyone, but 60 to 70% is going to revolve around those topics.
Is the tech that's coming out in the cars today, obviously, I think that's all kinds of job security for Diag, you know, Diag guys, but is... should we be teaching all the latest stuff now, or should we be just waiting for it to show up?
No, we need to be, Carm. You know, these cars that are driving themselves now and self-steering and you know, self-braking and all of that. But, you know, that needs to be taught for sure. But it, in some way, it all still boils down to fundamentals. You still have a solenoid that's being turned on and off by an engine computer. You still have a switch input that's sending some kind of signal to the computer. Can you troubleshoot that circuit? Is that sensor faulty? Is the wiring faulty? Or do you have a computer problem? I mean, those are the things that really need, in my opinion, teaching a newbie. It's more important to teach them those foundational pieces that they can build on and learn from later on some of the, you know, newer high tech, you know, maybe scary to some people stuff that's out there.
I asked you a little bit about, you know, you're thankful professionally or personally. We never covered the personal.
We didn't cover the personal. I knew you were going to go there. It was nice talking with you. We should have recorded that phone conversation we had the other night, because that was, you know, not the other night, a few weeks ago. Yeah. That was really cool. Yeah, from a personal level, personal thankfulness. My story's kind of crazy, Carm. I don't know how far we want to go with this, but this is on my mind, so I'll just do it. I'm a fatherless child. I grew up without a father. He died when I was 6 months old, and I was raised by my mother, me and my older brother, and my mom till I was about 7 or 8, and mom remarried. So I had an abusive stepfather. It was rough, man. And that went till I was 15. Mom got a PFA against him, which is a protection from abuse. Finally got him out of the house, and I just raged, man. From 15 to 19, like, I just did everything and anything that I could do, drug-wise, party-wise, women-wise, didn't matter. I just, like, it was just crazy. I went nuts. And, what I'm thankful for in that whole thing is kind of, God just kind of protecting me from going over the edge. There's verses that say, I am a father to the fatherless. And that's always how I just always felt that way to me. Like, he's always been there for me. So from a personal level, having all that trauma, Carm, has given me a platform in my own classroom where these kids, and not just kids, but adults that come in my room, and they come from all different backgrounds. And I haven't been a, this guy who's walked a straight and narrow and had a silver spoon. Like, I've been there, man. And so my great gratitude is that I know where you're coming from. And nothing was handed to me, and I had to work for it. And it's just, I'm thankful for that. Like, I look back, and it's crazy to say, but I'm thankful that, even to say that God took my father, from one aspect, I have a half brother and sister from my stepfather who I love tremendously. My younger brother, this one's crazy, is married to my wife's younger sister. So this is a marriage and they just had a baby, and she not just had, she's 3 now, my little niece. These are lives that wouldn't have existed had my father lived, Carm. Whether you're a man of faith or not, mm-hmm. that doesn't even matter. But look back and think about your life and gratitude. I have no regrets. Wow. Not even from my abusive stepfather. I wouldn't trade any of that. I wouldn't.
Thank you for being so honest and sharing with us, so transparent. Take us behind the scenes of all the work that it takes to put up a YouTube video, to set up the camera and to edit. And I think you were telling me your son's giving you a hand with this now?
Yeah, Caleb, my second born, who's now 17. And I have 4 kids, by the way. So
great.
Been happily married for 21 years, and I have 4 children. My oldest is 19. My second born, Caleb, is 17. A lot of my subscribers and people listening would know also my other 2, Bo, who comes to class with me sometimes, and then my youngest is a girl, which is May. But Caleb has taken an interest in what I'm doing, and he's been my cameraman. He has been my editor over this past year, and it's been a tremendous help. And it is a huge amount of time, Carm. I wouldn't even be able to put a number on it, but I'm using multiple camera feeds. I'm using a desktop recording. So I might have a video with 4 different feeds that I'm pulling from. And if it's my average video is probably 40 minutes long. I've had a video that's been that length of time take me 10 hours to edit. Just from a standpoint of multiple camera feeds and getting the right, edit and cut and having it very smooth. And it's taken me time, just like anything, just like the automotive field. It's taken me time to get good at editing and filming too. So the better I get, Carm, at it, the better I get at this, the longer it takes me. You know that too. I know I'm speaking to you.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Audio doesn't take as long as video and all the multiple feeds, but I'm sitting here is so relating to what you're saying. And, yeah. And you know, my daughter is editing our audio for us. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great, and it's great that you've got family involved, and obviously you could get yourself focused on other projects while Caleb is doing the editing for you.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I mean, I spend a few hours a day just on emails now alone. So having Caleb be there editing while I'm able to handle the email side of my business is tremendous. And yeah, it's just something that I didn't anticipate in the past.
Are all of your ideas coming from real actual case studies or people writing in and saying, hey, would you do something on this?
You know, I haven't done that yet, Carm, to take outside suggestions. It's something that I would be willing to pursue, but my focus has really just been, well, A, on my class, you know, teaching foundational stuff, and B, would really just be whatever is facing me that particular day. That's what I'm filming. So I'm going to a garage, which is really right down the road from me, and that's where I do most of my work. And I just, you know, turn the camera on and we just go live. So I don't stage it. Just turn the camera on and let's do it. Here's my thought process. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's where we're going. And, you know,
it's raw and real.
Yeah. Yes, correct. Yep. And the feedback has been good. People want to hear my thought process. They want to know what I'm thinking about. And sometimes that leads to the incorrect thought process. Sometimes it leads to walking a path and then hitting a roadblock and backing up and saying, well, okay, I was wrong there and here's why. And I think that's just as valuable to bring to a viewer as just a clean cut, you know, perfectly edited video that makes you look like a hero every time.
You know, somebody that knows their stuff who's watching this is saying, I bet you chopped out 10 minutes worth of stumble.
Yep. And I'll do that sometimes just when I'm not making sense or I'm not, you know, coherent, but I like to keep as much of the idea as possible because I think that's just as important as what you're learning. You know, to learn a mistake too is important.
Got it. So you wrote the book to help out in class.
Yeah.
But you also offer the book for sale.
I do.
How long did it take you to write that?
In its current state, I've never really had a good answer for that. I would say 11 years it took me of teaching the subject, gathering material, putting things together to have it to a point where I felt like I could, I guess, sell it. I never really felt like it was ever ready to be on the market because it's always changing. So I don't know. 11 years to get it to its point now, and you know, I'm hoping to, you know, add additions to it in the future, maybe write another book that's kind of on the horizon in front of me.
What's next for Scanner Danner?
What is next for Scanner Danner is I am going to try to, believe it or not, get into a dealership with my friend Tommy Wolf of Positive Lead Diagnostics. I want to try to get into that dealership one day a week and be his gopher,
Wait a minute. Are you talking about like a reality video?
No video, no camera at all.
Oh, you just want to shadow him.
I just want to shadow because what I'm lacking right now, Carm, in what I'm doing, because the camera takes so much time and the editing takes so much time, I'm not seeing the amount of case studies that I want. I've always felt, Carm, that I was on top of my game in this field. Now, I've always been in the aftermarket, so I never worked on new stuff. I've always been 5 years behind, always. And I never had a problem with that because I don't see the cars till 5 years later out of warranty, right? Not a problem. Not to mention, you know, the aftermarket scan tools and material that you use for research, they don't have their information either. So it's not like I can work on a brand new car anyway.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's always been the thing, but that was when I was working for 20 different garages and having 10 to 20 case studies a week, if you want to call them that, maybe 20 diagnostic jobs a week. That's not that way anymore, brother. I'm that stupid camera slows me down so much. I need to get my hands on some more cars and I might actually go and work with Tommy. I even no pay too. Believe it or not, I'm going to go in and be like, let me hang out. I just want to be here. And yeah, so that's the plan.
Let me be a video neophyte and ask you the next question that's bubbling in my mind.
Yes.
Don't let the camera get in your way. Let your son just follow you. And, you know, it's 2 hours with a video that edits down to 40, but the essence is there and it, almost in real time.
No, that is an option. But for me to get into this dealership, which is what I want to do, and get involved with, really, my idea is that with the autonomous cars and the self-driving and, you know, using the factory equipment to, you know, do whatever. Mm-hmm. I just want to get in there and see a little bit more of than what I'm seeing right now. And there's a lot of guys that do this. You know, my friend Matthew Skundrit would be... Skundrich would be one that I would think of, that he is seeing so much of the stuff that I want to see because he works for body shops that the cars aren't under warranty when they're in an accident. So he's got to figure this stuff out. And I just want to be a little bit more part of that so I can just share with my class a little bit more about what's coming. What are they going to see? And I, Carm, I don't want to watch other people's YouTube videos and case studies to learn that. It's fine. I a lot of people do that. I'm not knocking that method. Mm-hmm. But for me, I need to touch it. I need to see it. I need to format my own opinion on how that circuit is actually working. And then I can talk on it with authority. And that's what I need more of. And I just need more case studies.
Brother. I love it. Are we going to see more mobile Diag guys out there?
I think so for a time. I am concerned a little bit about where the industry is going. Not concerned that I won't have a job, but just concerned for the way the industry is now and what it might look like 5 to 10 years from now. But I think in the interim, yes, because we have so much need for programming and proper diagnosis when a car is, say, in an accident or in a body shop or whatever, that the mobile diagnostic guys seem to be... There's a lot more now, Carm, than I ever remember, I'll tell you that.
You just said 5 years out, you had, you know, your vision thing on. What do you think it's going to look like in 5, 6, 7 years?
I mean, some people think I'm crazy, but some of the stuff I really feel like with these cars that are going to be driving themselves is... it just seems to me that for the liability involved for the technician, that there's going to end up being some type of government oversight, some type of government agency that's going to come in, like the airline industry has now, that says, if you have this problem, you are going to follow this procedure to the letter and do it how we tell you to do it. Otherwise, you are going to be held liable. We see that all the time on you know, shows on TV where, what's the program where you have the plane crashes? I forget the name of the show.
Well, it's the FAA's requirements on maintenance, and the guys have to be certified to work on a plane.
Yes, and if something was done wrong and that plane crashed and they figure out it was the mechanic that did something wrong, you're in trouble, man. And so that's where I see the automotive field going, in that direction. And unfortunately, that's going to mean government oversight, but I don't know. It's going to change everything.
Well, huge what you just said. And I know we've discussed this on the show, and I really hope that, like the doctors, like the lawyers, like the accountants, we can self-regulate this, actually. I would hope for that.
I hope so, too. You know why? Because I feel like if we go to the method I was just talking about, it's going to take out the guy that knows how to think and knows how to troubleshoot and knows how to do a repair that's effective and works. And it's just going to take that out of the mix. And that sucks. I don't want to be a robot. I don't want to follow a procedure like some stupid flowchart. I hate those things, man. I want to troubleshoot on my own. I want to fix it on my own, but it has to be done in a way that doesn't risk someone's life, you know?
I got it. On the fun note, you have a blooper reel?
A blooper. I don't have one specifically. I really wish over the years I would have saved all of that. I mean, I have terabytes of data, of video, and I probably have about 6 terabytes of video right now that I keep. And I should have saved bloopers in those, and I don't.
I'll bet you your fan base would just love to see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
For sure. I mean, I started doing that, Carm, in some of my videos. Like my latest one I did, it was just a simple smoke test on an exhaust leak on my RV. We were getting ready to take a trip, and I just posted that actually last week. And I added, Caleb and I have been adding the outtakes at the end of the video. So we've been doing that lately, and it's got a lot of good feedback. Guys like to see what goes on behind the scenes.
Well,
so.
You know, people ask, you know, for my 300th episode, I had to be interviewed. I couldn't just do a regular show. The people I invited on said, no, Carm, the interview is going to be about you. We want to know more about you. And I'm so happy that you came on the show here with us, Paul, and shared some really intimate behind the scenes things. I no doubt that I think we've all learned an awful lot more about Scanner Danner.
Scanner Danner. I'm not Dan.
No, and you're not Dan. I love this. I actually have to read this if you don't get a chance to see the bio on the show notes page. My name is Paul Danner, also known as Scanner Danner on YouTube. And no, my name is not Dan, which I get all the time. I guess people think my name is Dan, and I added Ner to rhyme with Scanner. Oh, my God. That is just too funny. Yep.
Yeah, and then let's add the next sentence, which I think that would be really stupid.
Yeah, let me just say it would be really stupid.
Why would I put Ner at the end of Dan to be like Dan, you know, to rhyme with Scanner?
Because people want to know and they want to figure it out. And
my name is Paul.
And his name is Paul. Yes, Paul Danner. Hey, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, absolutely, Carm. Thanks so much for the interview, man. I really wish you the best of luck, and I you're making a big name for yourself, man. I'm proud to be part of this. You've got some good guys that have been in here, and you know, just to be part of this is pretty exciting to me. So thank you for the invite.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you, Paul Danner, for hanging out on the podcast to discuss your world. Find the key talking points, additional bio information, and website links at remarkableresults.biz/E351. And don't forget about the growing interviews and roundtables with technicians and educators. You can find the series listed on the show notes sidebar on the website. Spend some time and see the mountain of content that will inspire you to find the next level in your life and career. I love to hear from you. Email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz, B-I-Z. Hey, talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.